This is Fuji Love, a podcast for Fujifilm X users from around the globe. Here are your hosts, Tomash and Fred.
Should I start?
Huh? Yeah, please start, yeah.
Okay, so hello everyone. Very exciting moment. We are starting with the Fuji Love podcast. Yeah, it's a big wow, actually, right?
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Are you nervous?
Yeah, just a little bit.
A little bit, okay. Maybe we should first introduce...
Great fun.
Great fun, yeah, we're going to have fun. Welcome, we have big community of Fuji users, of you guys online, around the Fuji Love website and around the Facebook group and the Facebook page. And yeah, we thought it would be nice to do something audio. To talk to you guys, that you can get to know us better, and that we can also involve into conversations with you. Okay, we are a bit nervous, as you can probably notice. At least I am.
Mm-hmm.
And let us first introduce maybe ourselves, that you know who is talking to you. So my name is Tomasz. You know me from Fuji Love. I have founded the website in March this year. I describe myself as a fine art travel photographer, whatever it means. I mean, I'm very interested into fine art photography. I do my black and white. I do travel. I'm also a musician. I'm a pianist. So I do a lot of artist portraits, orchestra shooting, musicians, chamber music. I'm a pianist, so this is a big part of my photography automatically.
Mm-hmm.
And with me today... the one and only, our new friend on Fuji Love.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Freek Dirks. I'm Dutch. And most English people have a little bit trouble pronouncing my first name right. In Holland, it's quite a common name.
Is it?
But yeah, it is Freek. It's a common name. In Germany... it's more like Frederick in that direction. But in England, the name is pronounced with an A sound.
Yeah.
And in America, it's getting an E sound. So okay. It's more like freak. And you can call me anything, George or Bill, but not freak.
So I'm already imagining the jokes, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but let's be honest here. Are you a Fuji freak?
Yeah, absolutely.
No,
I love my Fuji camera.
Okay, good. So let me. I have been also struggling and asking you several times already. Is it Freek?
Freek.
Freek.
E.
E. Freek. Also difficult for me. I come originally from Poland.
Mm.
We both, just that you guys know, we both live here. Have been living in Switzerland.
I'm here 5 years now.
Okay, with me it's 14. So
14. Wow.
Yeah, and we met through a photography meetup here in Switzerland,
mm-hmm.
and we immediately noticed that no, it's not true. At that, this was when was it? It was in probably 5 or 6 years ago when we first met.
Yeah, you had. I don't know if you still have it. The meetup group for Switzerland.
Exactly.
And then I started the meetup group for Lucerne and surroundings. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we are running the meetup groups here, but at some point we noticed that we are both carrying the Fuji cameras.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how our friendship started to develop, and the photography, chats. And today we are here sitting and starting this Fuji Love podcast. So, let's tell our listeners a bit about how did it start with the whole, the whole Fuji film, Fuji story in our case. How was it for you? When did you get your first and only, as I understand?
Yeah, I have an, what is it? The 100S
probably, right?
Yep, X100S. I have a DSLR Nikon camera that I used for the last... started out with a D80, then a D700. Now I own a D810 with all kinds of glass and things.
Heavy stuff.
Heavy stuff, yeah. And I like it heavy, but we'll talk about that later. I also have two children, Feline and Louise. Two girls, they are 11 and 6. And I was kind of fed up when we have a family
gathering,
and we go a lot of into the mountains, hiking and everything. And just to have the big gear with me, it didn't fit anymore. So I saw you with the Fuji film, the Fuji camera.
It was the at that time. Now I don't have it anymore. It was also the X100S. Yeah. It was the first camera also I got from Fuji. Yeah.
And I didn't want just a point and shoot camera. I wanted a really quality camera with all the settings I used, setting aperture, shutter speed. And this is a great camera to carry around. It's a retro model. I have the leather case around it. People actually think it's a toy camera. It's not
right.
Old analog camera.
Yeah, happens
so
a lot.
So it's not that people don't take you that much serious when you carry that around.
Mm-hmm,
if I come around with the Nikon, oh, you're a professional, and they, they're not harassing you, but you get noticed. And with the Fuji camera, I can just walk around, play with it. It's fine with people, so I can get really close to people and get some great shots.
Without them noticing you very often.
Yeah, because just a guy with a toy camera, which is fun, and old analog camera, right?
Yeah,
analog, you're still shooting analog. Yeah. And now it's...
You know, with my beginnings with Fuji was similar. I have shot, you know, everything in my life till now. I mean, like, not everything. I shot Canon, I shot Nikon. I had a Pentax at some moment for a very short time. And then the reason actually I got the Fuji was very similar. I mean, probably in most people's cases, I can imagine the reason is very similar. I was also looking. I also have a family. You know, I have friends. We are meeting for dinners, for hikes or whatever. And it was a pain just every time to take the backpack with a DSLR body plus maybe two lenses, because you know you never know, we're on a zoom lens and wide lens, and suddenly it was 4 kilograms on my neck. So then I was like really looking for something smaller, and I remember this very moment. I don't remember now, I think it was 2012 or 11. I think the X100 was the first one.
Mm-hmm.
It went I think it was 2011 or 10 when they announced it. But when I was looking for the smaller camera, I remember very well standing here in Lucerne, Switzerland, in front of the Photoshop on the main street, and looking at the shop window. You know, just thinking, what are the options? What can I get? And you know, there were Sony's, there was everything, right? There was Canon, small Canons, and then I saw this little weird looking Fujifilm X100S. And at this moment, I didn't know anything about it. I didn't know anything about Fuji, to be honest. I mean, I knew there were analog films my father used to use, you know. And so
I know it from.
And then I like, as I usually do, I was standing in front of this window. I took out my iPhone from the pocket. X100S reviews, so to see what it's all about. And suddenly, I start seeing those 5 stars reviews everywhere, like all over the place. I read a couple of them there at the spot, you know, standing in front of the shop. I think people must have been thinking, like, what is this guy doing there for half an hour? You know, after this half an hour, I went in, I bought the camera, I went out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't look back. 1 year later, my Canon gear was, and my Nikon gear at the time, was gone. And today I have I don't have the X100S anymore, now it's the T.
Mm-hmm.
And I have the X-T1 and the X-E2. So actually I have two mirrorless, Fuji cameras with interchangeable lenses, and the X100T, which is like S with a fixed, this 23mm lens.
Yeah.
I don't look back.
No.
It's just, it's interesting that you see, what do you mean with this part? You said the Fuji cameras are sometimes not heavy enough for you. Because this is the thing which actually I really enjoy. I'm enjoying that they are not heavy. You know, that this is the thing which is a big plus.
For carrying, it's absolutely yes. But for me, if I'm even on an event, I like substance in my hand. I have trouble stabilizing my hands with a light camera.
Okay.
I need the weight to stabilize it. Sounds crazy, okay. But I like the big gear.
I know.
Stabilize the camera to
feel it
to push your hand something.
Yeah.
And with when the camera is too light, I.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, I think this kind of depends. I think it depends very much on what you're shooting and mm-hmm. how long you're shooting. Like, you know, what kind of jobs or what kind of, you know, assignments or, you know.
Mm-hmm.
As you say, if you go for hiking now and you hike for 6 hours with this everything on your back, on your neck, on your, you know, back.
Yeah.
Can be a pain.
Absolutely.
And also the question, did you try the other Fuji cameras? X-T1?
No, not yet.
Okay. So you are talking based on the experience with the X100S.
I had some mirrorless and...
Oh, you had some other mirrorless, okay.
No, I didn't own them, but...
Okay.
In the group and then...
Yeah.
Lady has a Sony camera. Guy had a Sony camera. Very enthusiastic about it. And I... Oh, let me try it. And I had it in my hands. And I said, well, it's...
Which one was... Do you remember which it was?
No idea. I'm not so into
it. Okay, you know...
But it's too...
Okay, so I tell you now, like, this is interesting.
And it looks funny. No, because the lenses itself is quite big, and then you have this small thing in the back.
Yeah. That's the point. You're actually.
Maybe I'm a bit old.
No, you're hitting a very interesting point. When I started using the Fuji, you know, I also started with the X100S. It's a small camera. You can put it, you know, in your jacket pocket, inside pocket, whatever. It's perfect for you. Mm-hmm. And then I got the X-T1. This was the second camera I got. Which is this interchangeable lens, so you can put different, you know, Fuji lenses on it. And okay, the X-T1 itself is, I think, the body is kind of, it's a bit bigger maybe than the, you know, X-T1 with the
mm-hmm.
with the lens attached, but not much. But then, when you look at the Fuji, at the lineup of Fuji lenses, you know, some of them, when you put them on the body on this X-T1. Mm-hmm. It's not that small anymore, but still, it's not a Nikon D810 with a 70-200.
No.
But still, that's maybe what you should try. We can arrange it. This feels already, because I know what you mean exactly. I was trying with some Sony mirrorless, even with the small Fuji, this one. I know what you mean with this substance, with you know, to feel it in your hands.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the X-T1, now, when you take the, 16 to 55 millimeter zoom, it's from Fuji, it's already quite a substantial piece of glass.
Okay.
It's not huge, but it weighs, you know? Mm-hmm. So this combined with the X-T1 already actually feels good. I mean, for me, it's the perfect balance. It's not that heavy, but it's not like a feather that, where is my camera? You know, that I don't know. What. So let's meet up once
yeah.
I wonder what you're saying. Yeah?
Love to try it.
By the way,
Samsung thing.
Yeah. No, but my question is simple and very, actually, it's a very, very, you know, typical question, nothing revolutionary here. When you look at your Nikon pictures and then when you look at your Fuji
mm-hmm.
photos, how would you describe the difference? What is the difference between photographs from your Nikon camera and photographs from your Fuji camera, if you would have to put it in two sentences? Can you grasp it? Or there is no difference? Then we can stop recording this podcast.
Yes. Yeah, well, it's not a fair comparison, I think. When I look at in the overall view, the Fuji is much better than the D7000 and the D80. But now I have the 810. It's pretty close in the overall quality. You can't compare us, but this one has a fixed lens.
So you're talking about X100S?
Yeah, okay. Exactly. And if I have my... What is it? 70-200.
Mm-hmm.
It has a different feel about it because it's a tele.
Mm-hmm. The lens, yeah.
The lens, yeah. The photos thing. So I haven't really. What's in 45 millimeter?
This is 23 on a small, you know, on a equivalent 35 full frame equivalent 35.
Well, I have to see if I.
Okay, but.
In the next week, I'm going to make some pictures, some photos with this one and the Nikon 35 mil.
Okay.
And then I compare those two together. But
so I am talking actually more, you know, less about the, let's say, the field of view and the. I'm talking about more about the character of the image in terms of, you know, colors, how it's drawing the lines, how it's rendering the image. I mean, is there something about the character, you know? Imagine you put the same lens on this sensor, and so the optics are the same.
Mm-hmm.
Is there something about the character of the image, you know, about the itself?
Absolutely.
Can you describe it?
The Fuji, and I don't know if it technically is right, it has a great clarity about it. It's crisp, it's bright, it's vibrant in that sense.
I mean, the colors, like the.
It doesn't have the green cast as the Fujifilms used to have.
Okay.
Fujifilm are also sort of a bit on the green side, mm-hmm. and Kodak was more on the yellow.
Oh, you're talking about the
film. The Fujifilm.
Okay. Would you say. I mean, guys, I will not. I don't have to hide anything here, because one of the reasons I stuck with Fujifilm, and I'm today actually an official Fujifilm ex-photographer also, and I absolutely love those cameras. Actually, the main reason for me that I stay with Fujifilm, and you know, I had those moments when I still thought, okay, should I try again? You know, maybe there is a new Pentax. You know, there's a medium format Pentax. They said, this new Canon with 45. And I tried some of them. What keeps me at Fujifilm is the character of the image. There is something about Fujifilm extran sensor files, which is the sensor in all Fuji cameras at the moment, which is very difficult for me to describe. But if I'm trying to describe to someone, I tell them like this: Fujifilm files, the images, are sharp and soft at the same time. There is something about the rendering of the image which I absolutely love. You have every possible detail, the detail, as you say, the clarity. Everything is there. It looks, you know, when you, I'm not a pixel peeper. How, you know, I don't zoom 300%. I just look at my picture or I print it. You know, everything is there. It's sharp. Every leaf on the tree. Everything is there.
Okay.
But at the same time, there is a certain, I would say, like painterly, you know, side to those images. They are soft, they are natural, they are not with the Nikon. I don't know how it's before, maybe you can. I had a couple of Nikons, and a couple of times I had a conversation with my father, who is a, you know, he has a good, great eye, I think. He's an amateur photographer, not photographing enough. This is our next subject, by the way. And when I was shooting Nikon, he was looking at my images, you know, he's living in Poland, so he was looking at them online. He was very often sending me back this comment and saying, why is it so sharp? It's too sharp. It's not natural. It looks like a digital drawing.
Okay.
This I agreed for my, you know, feeling, for my, you know, aesthetics. This is this point which I just love about Fuji. They somehow hit this spot where it's natural and soft, but at the same time very sharp. Okay. Is it something you are noticing or not? Maybe.
I see the point. Fujifilm had this. I think you described it correctly. It's not blurry or anything. It's sharp, but not. It doesn't hurt your eyes that much. It doesn't. When I look on the internet, 500 pixels, websites like that, I see a lot of overdoing it on the sharpness. And I don't know if that post-production but it's too hard.
Yeah, of course. This is another point. We never know when we look at any particular picture on the internet from someone, unless the person is describing it. If it's a post processing issue, or if it's an image straight from the camera.
Mm-hmm.
But what I mean with the Fuji files is what I get straight of the camera.
Yeah, you don't have to do a lot of.
You don't have to do a lot, and it's not over sharpened. It's just. It's brilliant, guys. It's brilliant. The coffee is good, by the way.
Okay, another one. Well, when you talk about a couple of weeks ago, I was in this professional photography studio trying out some portrait model shooting.
Uh-huh.
And they had this phase one camera.
Yeah.
The big one.
The big ones. The big guys.
You can get a really, really nice car for that money.
Okay.
And of course it was tethered to the laptop, and I shot that model, and she was 3-4 meters ago away from me.
Okay.
And then I find it quite intimidating, because when you zoom in on the eye,
mm-hmm.
it's so sharp, every detail is. Why do you want to do that? It was too. Because the files are so big, you have a lot of information. And I said, well, you can't put it in a magazine or anything, because you have to blur it in a way, because it's not flattering for the model. It's every pore, every glitch, everything mm-hmm. you see. So you have to go the long way in the post-production to get that so people can look at it, because it was too much.
Yeah, some people probably could argue, if you the more detail or sharpness or whatever you call it you have in the original file, the more room you have to. I mean, you can always blur it, right? As you say.
Yeah.
But if it's blurry in the first place, you can't necessarily sharpen it. So maybe, you know what I mean? Some people argue, okay, if you don't like this sharp look, you
I can see that for products. You want as much as detail in product photography.
Mm-hmm.
For model, when I shoot people, I go for 200 ISO.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a little bit less sharp than 100 ISO.
Okay.
Because that is what you want in the end. You don't want people that sharp on the photo.
Yeah,
I find it a bit intimidating, but...
Okay, this is... Yeah. Question of our choices, of our preferences, and I am happy with my Fujis.
Absolutely.
As
Me
of
too.
Today, I don't say that I will not look at different cameras in the future. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I still think Fuji has also areas where they can improve. This is, now is very exciting times. Probably everybody's kind of anticipating the next body, X Pro 2 from Fujifilm.
Mm-hmm.
We are very excited if it's happening or not.
Okay. What's special about the body?
There's an X Pro 1. I don't know if you ever had it in your hands. Mm-hmm. I never owned the X Pro 1, but from what I hear from people absolutely love this camera. Still many users and people love this camera. And those people are hoping that the form factor, that the character, that the size will stay the same. But one of the main expectations, there's also a discussion about it, but still, all of today's Fujifilm cameras, if it's an X100S, X-T1, X-E2, they are basically facilitating the same sensor. There are slight differences, but basically it's the same X-Trans 16 megapixel sensor, 16 megapixels, which... this is another discussion. We don't have to go into megapixels. And this is also not what we mainly discuss on this podcast.
No.
But still, one of the expected features of the new X Pro 2 is a 24 megapixel sensor. They are probably, after all, adding pixels to the sensor. What I really hope, me personally, is whatever Fujifilm does, if it's 24, 20, 22... 99 megapixel, I hope this character of the image will stay the same. please, Fuji, please don't change it. Just don't do anything with the character of your images. Then I'm gone.
Yeah, what you mean?
So, you know, people are saying it's probably the beginning of 2016 when the X-Pro 2 will appear on the horizon.
After Christmas.
Yeah, after Christmas, unfortunately. But, you know, you can still, you know... you can order a voucher maybe from family, you know, for an X-Pro 2 or whatever, to have it under your Christmas tree.
Yeah. Wow, that would be nice.
Yeah. Frank, anything else? What should we talk about? You know, guys, this is our first podcast. Just please apologize. Yeah, for everything. We're nervous. We are not very well structured. We are doing this without a script. We have a couple of things here on the paper. Any feedback from you guys, we would really appreciate it. Send us an email, contact fujilove@gmail.com. Send your suggestions, send your toughest criticism. Tell us what would you like us to talk about. There is another podcast, you are probably familiar with it, We Shoot Fuji, where Scott Bourne and Marco LaRousse are talking every 2 weeks. We don't necessarily aim for, you know, differentiating ourselves. This is also a very friendly, you know, bi-weekly chat we are having with Freck here, with our by the way, the coffee by Freck is really good. What is it? What is this coffee? I mean, like, it tastes so good.
Yeah. First of all, you have to have the a proper Italian machine.
Oh. A proper one.
A proper one. I have this foamer from Nespresso, and it broke down.
Oh!
So I had one. So I went back to the shop.
But it didn't break down on purpose, right?
No. It just And I wanted to exchange it for a new one, and I went in the local Nespresso shop here in Lucerne, in the city center. Very nice woman assisted me and. And then she said, "Are you a member of the Nespresso family?"
Okay.
And I said, "No, I have a proper Italian machine." I was out in 1 minute.
Anyway, during this time, Frank is preparing a second cup of coffee. Once more, we would love to hear from you. We would love to get your suggestions, feedback, comments, criticism. Let us know what you would like us to talk about on the next episodes. Tell us also, if you could, this is important, you can also post comments on the Fujilove Facebook page or in the Fujilove Facebook group. Those of you familiar with the pages, you know where to find us. Those of you who are new to Fujilove, to the Fuji family, just Google Fujilove or put the Fujilove in the search box on Facebook and you will find everything what you need. I will once the podcast goes online, I will post information about it on the Fujilove page, on the website. And what we would also appreciate is tell us how it sounds. I mean, we are by any means, right, Freck? We are not audio specialists. If anything, we are into photography. We invested in a little very very simple setup here to make our horrible voices to sound a bit better than they are, but still let us know how these things sound and we can still work on this one as well. Okay. Oh, thank you. This looks good. Okay. I mean, let's see how are we doing on time. We are at half an hour now. This is also one of the things. Let us know how long would you prefer this podcast to be. You know, some of you commute, listen it to it while jogging, while, I don't know, whatever you are doing. Tell us, do you prefer 15 minutes, half an hour, 1 hour? This is, you know, we want to produce this podcast with you guys. You become part of this whole idea here. So
absolutely.
We really would love to hear from you. What should we talk about?
Motivation.
Are you motivated?
Lack of motivation for shooting photos.
Yeah, this is one of the things we would like to talk about. The last one today. Don't worry, we'll be off in a minute. What I have been struggling recently, on a regular basis, and I'm sure most of you guys into photography know the problem at some point.
is motivation. I love photography. I love taking pictures. I love looking at pictures, at photographs. And but still, I have those moments when I have some kind of internal block, or I don't know how to describe it. It's, I have time, you know. I have few hours of time. We are both busy, but still, it happens like a miracle that suddenly there is this time. There's this couple of hours free time, and actually, in my head, the voice is telling me, go out and photograph, do something, look for new scenes, new ideas. But something is stopping me.
I know what you mean.
What is it?
I have the same.
Is it some kind of fear of not taking a good photograph, or is it a?
No.
Do you experience?
Yeah, for
such?
Me, I feel like I finished another circle. I tried a lot of photography, portrait, landscape, cityscapes, macro, flash, studio.
You have done it all. I'm not that advanced.
No, I'm not a pro, but I tried it all. And
okay.
Now I'm a bit stuck. I feel I have to specialize in one area. Otherwise, when I continue doing this, I'm just repeating myself.
I know the problem.
And this, I don't learn enough. That's my point. I want to learn. I want to develop myself, my skills. And it's go out and shoot a lot. But shooting the same thing, I know the settings, I know the lightning, I know what it's about. And I get some great shots. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's not a problem.
Oh, yeah, I know a couple
but
of your shots.
That's
guys,
good.
We'll show you soon on the website a couple of fake shots. And
love to share them with
stuff.
You.
Absolutely.
And get your feedback about it. So I find a hard time just finding things I didn't do before. And of course, you can always go deeper and further and specialize. But my problem is when I choose something, that means I can't do another thing. And I want to keep all my my options open. That's my thing.
We should go to the same shrink.
Yeah.
That's the thing. I have this. I mean, as you said, you have done it all. I mean, you have shot, so many different things. Me too. Maybe not everything, but still, portraits, landscapes, events, weddings, black and white color. So when you say, you said you were looking maybe for something new to learn. Probably there is nothing new to learn. I mean, in terms of a genre
mm-hmm.
of photography, we have done it all. Let's say.
Yeah.
In the end, I don't know. Do you have the feeling, the clear, feeling deep down in your heart? Let's say, do you have it? Which of those things is the, strikes the excitement the most, or like which of those areas of photography you enjoy the most? Do you know? Do you feel this, or you have even problem with this? Is it landscape what you love the most? Is it portraits? Is it products, or is it details?
I love it all, actually. And what's blocking me that, well, one thing is I don't have an audience.
This will change very soon.
This will change very soon. What that means is a lot of my photos just live on my hard disk.
That's not good.
And that's not good. I print them out in my apartment here in Lucerne. I have everything on the wall, but was.
And
I got some new ones. But that's the thing. And most photographers, you have thousands of photos, hundreds of thousands of photos maybe on your hard disk. And you have 100, 200, 400, 500 great, awesome photos. But who is going to look at them?
If you don't put them out, nobody.
Yeah, so
okay.
So how
so
do
guys,
you put them
we
out?
Have, we have to work on this one, guys. I mean, this week, Freck's first portfolio, first series of images will be on Fujilove. And you guys tell him honestly and tough and brutally what you think. Is it okay?
That's okay with me. Yeah. Love to have some feedback.
Yeah.
It's helping me to get
with me, deep down, as you probably know, deep down, I feel, I know, I
that I love black and white photography. This is classic. This is something deepest, you know, which I actually know. But still, up here, in this thing called head, I'm interested in everything. I mean, I'm hungry, you know. I want to. It excites me to see what different photographers do, you know, new approach to portraits, this way of looking at landscape. And it excites me to this extent that I also then that I also want to try it myself, and I. It's clear, I you know, when I go out for the first time and do portraits, I would be not Peter Hurley, you know what I mean. But still, I want to try it. I get excited about it. You know, the photography part of it is really firing me up. I'm you know, looking at light, at shadow, at. But then I realize, okay, but if you want to be really good at it, or if you want to really achieve something, you have to stick to this thing. I can't be a portrait photographer, landscape, black and white.
No, you can't do it all. But so I'm not ready to make that kind of commitment.
Not yet,
well,
you know.
We were both, last week we were at Michael Kenner in the opening exhibition, and we met Michael, and he's a great guy. And I thought, well, you're so lucky, because you're doing the same thing for 40 years, same format, same. Hey, he does a lot of things, all the things analog with the dark room and everything. And that's great. But there's no doubt.
Okay.
He just said, well, this is what I do, and this is the only thing I do.
Can I interrupt?
Yeah, sure.
How are you sure he has no doubts?
He looked very confident.
He has to. It's his exhibition.
Yeah,
he's selling.
But it was concurrent. He was in. That's what he was completely satisfied with what he was doing. There was no hesitation or longing for, I want to do this, I want to do that. No, this is what I do. And he really loved what he was doing.
Yeah, that's true.
Being out there on his own. He was really comfortable there.
Okay.
And
you know, how old is Michael Kenner? I don't know exactly, but probably
in his 60s or something.
He's in 60s. Okay. We have still a little while to go, guys. We are not yet up there. So my question, my assumption is, I mean, to be honest, I'm pretty sure Michael Kenner went through what we are going through right now. I can't imagine that he didn't at some point in his...
In the beginning of his career, he was doing some commercial work.
Yeah.
But even then, it was landscape.
Well, you know, but maybe he went through this problematic kind of time like we are having now. Maybe he went in the time when, you know, he was not showing his images yet. Maybe he was 25, you know. I'm pretty sure he had to... Do you think he was, like, born and he knew, okay, I will shoot square... black and white images for the rest of my life? I think he looked, I think he experimented, and at some point probably, this is something exactly,
maybe
we didn't reach this point yet. Maybe there it comes after this phase, hopefully. I hope, because otherwise this is really it's a struggle. I struggle every day instead of going and doing my things, of you know, of taking the, exactly as you say, what I want to do. I am sitting and thinking, should I do this or that, or who do I want to become, and what's the result? I'm staying at home, and another day is gone.
No, it's
so.
Yeah, what struck me most about Michael Kenner is that he made that choice to photograph landscape, preferably by night, and doing this whole analog thing and printing his own stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It was his choice from within him. He didn't think, well, what niche market could be profitable, where can I make a career? Made that choice because it belonged to him. He had to. He's more an artist than a photographer, I think.
Okay,
and
well,
it was in him and he had to let it out. And he finally got recognized, and now he's selling prints.
So this we kind of come back to this where we started.
Mm-hmm.
If you have this you know, in German we call it Bauchgefühl.
Yeah.
This is a
gut feeling.
If you have your gut feeling, if you actually know you yourself deep down what you love the most, what you, if you would have the last, you know, opportunity to photograph tomorrow for 1 hour, what would you go and photograph? If you know it, and probably you know it, to be honest. Like if you would be, you know, if I would put it at the wall, you know, you have 1 hour time. That's it. That's your photography for the rest of your life. What would you choose? If you concentrate, I'm pretty sure you would actually know what you... Maybe it would be your daughter. Maybe it would be portrait. Maybe, you know, you know.
Yeah.
If we have... So, Michael Kenna, he had this gut feeling. What did he do? He had courage. I think it's some kind of courage also. To stick to his gut feeling for so long.
Stubbornness.
Yeah, in a way, for so long that it started selling. And again, money was not his motivation. No. He just, he loved photography, but he loved this, he loves the photography in this area. This part of you know, photography is his thing. And he stuck to it. Now, if you do it for 20 years, you will get noticed.
I think photography is the most easy and the most difficult art form there is. And I mean by easy that if you want to be a painter, painting is a skill, it's a draft, you have to be really good at it. Photography, you just have to push a button and you have a picture. It doesn't necessarily have to be a good picture, but you get one. It's the hardest, because to have a signature of your own as a photographer.
Absolutely.
If I write my name down, it's my handwriting and it's unique in the world.
Mm-hmm.
With photos, that's a completely different one. And if you get, as a photographer, to the point that people recognize your style, wow, this is Michael Kenna. And even if another photographer would have taken that picture, you will still say, well, then it's Michael Kenna's style. And there aren't that many photographers who have this distinguished style that you immediately can recognize them.
Absolutely.
And
but do you think is it a question of talent, just and only? I mean, you have your eye, for sure. I mean, you see the things in the world in your, or in your, you know, personal and one and only way. You don't just press the button. I mean, you frame, you expose, you, and this is you, Freek, who is taking this photo.
Yeah, that's true, but when you look at the internet, you see a lot of photos who can be took by just anyone. It's not...
Yeah, that's...
It's special that you can see, well, wow, true. This is an Erwin Olof photo. When you see it from a distance, you know, okay, that's Erwin Olof.
He's an absolute
photographer.
Okay. But this guy, like Michael Kenna or whoever it is, from the bigger, you know, Henri Cartier-Bresson, you kind of recognize. But he was not doing, I think, they were not doing anything else. They were looking at the world, how they look at it, and pressing the button when they feel it's the time to press it.
Yeah.
Is it just that, is it something you can learn? Or is it just something you have or you don't have? And that it gets so recognizable is just a matter of a coincidence. You are born with this kind of vision, which will get recognized.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Do we have a chance, Frey?
Absolutely. We have to get in contact with our inner selves and find the motivation there and just do what you have to do.
Absolutely.
And if you're lucky enough, the world will recognize it and reward you for that.
But for sure...
Loads of money, but otherwise you're one of the artists who die poorly.
And what's a prerequisite? What is for sure? You can't achieve it without one thing. Without taking the camera in your hand,
going out
and photograph. And that's where we will be slowly now wrapping up, and we have the last thing here which will help. It will help me, it will help you, and hopefully it will help many of you guys who are struggling with similar things. We have the first Fuji Love assignment today, and The microphone is yours, Frank.
Okay. We like to have some input from you, and the best way to do is we want to give you an assignment. Just go out there, and we are interested in the next question. What does yellow look like? Yellow comes in many forms. And how does yellow look like to you? Make a photo from something yellow and post it to...
Post your pictures to the FujiLove Facebook group. Those of you in the group, you know what we mean. Those of you who are new to FujiLove, search for FujiLove group on Facebook. You have to join the group. I will accept you. We'll let you in. Mm-hmm. From then on, post your yellow images and hashtag them with FujiLove yellow. One word, no spaces, FujiLove yellow. So we can find them and look at them and discuss them on the next episode. Now,
absolutely.
Now, yellow. I mean,
what's yellow?
Can be piece of egg.
Could be.
Just kidding. I mean, we are really like open for whatever you guys come up with.
Yeah.
Be creative. Take your camera in your hand now, not when you are driving, but the next possible moment. Let's look for something yellow, and we are really looking forward to seeing your work. Frecht, where can people find you online?
Yourlocalphotographyguide.com. There you can find all the information about me, about my website. It's a website. It's a platform, a service for photographers, to photographers. It's all about traveling and photography. So check me out and let me know what you think about it. And Thomas, where can we find you?
You can head over to my fine art photography website, which is Tomash, Tomash .photography, and have a look what I am into. And of course, don't forget, every couple of days there is a new article, a new piece of information over at FujiLove.com.
You can find us there as well.
See you. 2 weeks.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to FujiLove with your hosts, Tomash and Frank. We'll catch you next time.